WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
From 90.7 WFAE Charlotte, 90.3 WFHE Hickory, welcome to Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Maybe you're seeing it too, but my mailbox is beginning to fill with solicitations from some absolutely wonderful and worthy charitable groups looking for contributions, donations to whatever cause they represent that generally helps those who can't help themselves. And now, to be quite candid, these charities and benevolent groups solicit all year long. They've just learned over the years to hit Americans up for a contribution around the holiday season because that's when most of us are in our most giving mood. That being said, all we want is much of our, we just want much of our contribution to go as to as much of the charitable cause as possible. But how do you know that that is exactly what's happening? How much should you give? What's enough? And is there such a thing as giving too much? Well, most of our three panelists, if not all of them, agree with that theory that there is a possibility of giving too much. We've invited here today Bob Lupton, author of the book Toxic Charity, How Churches and Charities Hurt Those They Help and How to Reverse It. Mr. Lupton is also founder of FCS Ministries, that stands for Focused Community Strategies Ministries, in Atlanta. Bob Lupton, welcome.
Nice to be with you.
Carol Hardison is Chief Executive Officer of Crisis Assistance Ministry. The mission of Crisis Assistance Ministry is the same today as it was in 1975 when it was first founded, to provide assistance and advocacy for people in financial crisis, helping them move forward and closer to self-sufficiency. Carol Hardison, welcome.
Thank you.
Darren Ash is Executive Director of Charlotte Family Housing. Charlotte Family Housing is a shelter to housing program for homeless families. And from your website, Darren, you place an emphasis on creating an innovative and effective model which provides a customized path leading each of your homeless families to self-sufficiency. There's that phrase again. And you focus on empowerment in that you will not do anything for a family that they can do for themselves. Darren, good to see you as well.
Thank you, Chris. Blessed to be here.
Bob Lupton, let's start with you. The central thesis of your book, Toxic Charities, How Churches and Charities Hurt Those That They Help.
The thing that prompted me to write that book is 40 years of experience in inner city Atlanta, where I've seen some very inspiring work as well as some charitable work that has been hurtful to people. Not all well-intended charitable work or giving actually produces positive results. And so that was my motivation for writing a book with a title like Toxic Charity.
Based on the description of the two charities, representatives of which we have here today, do they meet that criteria that you're talking about in that their overall objective is getting to that point of self-sufficiency?
Charlotte is absolutely blessed with strong ministries and strong leadership that really do get it, that are about enabling people to move out of poverty into self-sufficiency. And so you've got good reason to be very proud and encouraged by some of these ministries in Charlotte.
Your approach, your concept here, is not novel, is not new. It's been argued for decades. Why now? And why should it be different now?
I think we are at a moment of paradigm shift in our country. Our country gives more than any other country on the globe. We're charitable in our DNA, and so giving is a part of our culture. But frankly, much of that giving in the past has been has been unexamined. There's the assumption that if we give charitably out of the right motivations and a good heart, people will be helped. More recently, those who are funders, board members, those in philanthropy are beginning to ask the question, are we really empowering people by all of this giving? And what we are discovering is that for the most part, people are not moving out of poverty. For all of our giving, poverty increases, and that's true not only in our country, but in the way we do aid globally. And so it's a moment of examination. Let's look at outcomes rather than just all of the activities and begin to ask the tough questions of ourselves.
Carol Hardison, let me get your thoughts on what Bob Lupton is saying here, that some of our charitable giving is, in fact, hurting the people it's supposed to help.
I absolutely agree. And I actually believe in our community we're at a critical point coming out of this recession into recovery. We've taught thousands and thousands of people to come and receive in a most appreciative manner short-term assistance. And now we face the threat of creating a system of dependency ourselves.
Is that also, Bob Lupton, one of the fears about the one-way giving, as you call it?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's not actually a fear, it's a reality. There is a progression or a regression of one-way giving. That first gift elicits appreciation, excitement. Thank you so much. The second gift creates some expectation. I wonder if this is going to happen again. By the time you give the third gift, you've created anticipation. When is it coming again? By the fourth gift, you have created an entitlement. And beyond that, dependency increases. So there is a progression or a regression to one-way giving.
Where have I heard this philosophy before, that if we give too much without much expectation in return?
Well, that's exactly right. It's not a new discussion. It's just one that is being more publicly discussed these days. And this book, Toxic Charity, is surprising to me. It's stirring up an awful lot of very vigorous discussion in churches and agencies, the philanthropic community, which I think is very timely.
Do you think you have history on your side in your argument right now?
Not really.
That's a surprising answer to me, because I thought you would say unequivocally, yes, history is on my side of the argument right now, because money has been given to great causes over the decades, and there's very little to show for it.
Well, in terms of supporting my premise, history supports that. We look at the kind of the results of our charitable giving in our history and our memory, and when we look at actual results, they're rather abysmal. And that's true of government aid as well. The way we have been doing aid internationally has not produced healthy results in developing countries.
Darren Ash, at what point is enough enough? A tough, nice, easy question for you.
No, as you mentioned, we are a shelter to housing empowerment program for homeless families, and we're viewed as a long-term solution to break the cycle of generational homelessness and poverty. And we learned years ago, mainly through my clinical social workers, that continued charity and one-way giving basically increased dependency. It stripped dignity and self-esteem, and it decreased personal accountability. So our social workers really started moving toward transacting with and motivating the poor and using such things as empowerment rewards like microloans and match savings accounts. That's what we thought was best to kind of lead our population in a dignified way toward economic independence.
Now, I do find it intriguing, however, you provide housing for people who are down and out. A tad different from the objective of Crisis Assistance Ministry, who provides possibly a meal or some other assistance on a short-term basis. How do you provide housing to somebody on a daily basis? I'm a little bit confused in...
Well,
how do you not provide long-term assistance to your clients?
You know, housing is like one of our five core services. I mean, we have housing, then we have the clinical social work and vocational counseling. And those are part of any best practice agency. But where we're really unique is that we do emphasize long-term volunteer engagement, where volunteers really stand with a family for up to 3 years to motivate them through our program, and then the empowerment rewards, which are basically our below market transactions with the poor.
So it is understandable, and from a practical standpoint, that you're not going to that your clients are going to be with you for a lot longer than some of the other assistance agencies.
Right. We were kind of, our roots kind of go back about 6 years ago when Crisis Assistance really partnered to help launch us as that long-term solution. So our program does go 2 to 3 years, where Crisis is a much shorter term.
So have you ever had an instance, or when should you tell a client? At what point? We've done all we can do for you. From here on out, you're on your own.
I'll turn that back around. I think we never fire our clients. They fire us.
Okay.
Really, we provide a path. And to be quite honest, we think it's a very fair path. But we let God be God.
And are you seeing the same clients over and over again? Then you're not. Is that what you're saying?
Probably 25% of our clients do not make it through our program and fall back into homelessness.
Carol?
You know, when you talk about the fact that Charlotte Family Housing spends a long time with them, and it almost feels like it's just the opposite of what you all are promoting, what Darren and his program have learned is it often takes one whole year just to develop a deeply trust-based relationship with the people they're serving. Sometimes it takes an entire year to find out about trauma and pain and PTSD that could be in their life. So working with the families is going to take a long time if you're really working towards the self-sufficiency goal.
Bob Lupton, does the fact that a lot of charities do see the same client over and over and over again bolster your argument?
It does. That's a sign of dependency. Folks become reliant on charitable giving, which is unhealthy for them and unhealthy for our society. It's the opposite of self-sufficiency.
How far along, Carol, the same question that I asked Darren, how many of your clients kind of age out, if you will, from the needing the assistance of Crisis Assistance Ministry?
I would answer that to say we have more people who come back to a place like Crisis Assistance than you would have at a Charlotte Family Housing, even though in a given year we'll only see 70 to 75% of the folks will come one time. You're going to see more repeat need.
All right. Carol Hardison is CEO at the Crisis Assistance Ministry. Robert Lupton is author of the book Toxic Charity. He is with us, as well as Darren Ash, director and founder of Charlotte Family Housing, and our discussion about charitable giving and how much is too much and when should we stop. We'll continue on WFAE after this.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Sherpa, helping clients find talent by providing staffing, recruiting, and consulting services specializing in accounting and finance, technology, and project management. Headquartered in Charlotte and online at SherpaLLC.com. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, dog shows. We've talked about dogs on this program before as pets, but now we'll look at a different world, the world of show dogs. Perhaps you've seen them on TV and wondered what it takes to be a show dog. What are the judges looking for as these canines and their owners parade in front of them? We're going to find out what makes a champion show dog, why purebreds are so important, and we'll meet a few of the competitors. That's tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, U.S. Airlines face the biggest shortage of pilots in 40 years, how the industry is coping with mandatory retirement and stricter rules on flight experience.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Our guests today include Bob Lupton, author of the book Toxic Charity. Carol Hardison from Crisis Assistance Ministry is with us, as well as Darren Ash from Charlotte Family Housing. Bob Lupton, your book, Toxic Charity, does talk a lot about your experience of urban living. That's a kind way of putting it. Was it the poor area of Atlanta that you lived in and have lived in for 40 years now?
I have been involved in this work for 40 years in Atlanta. For the first 10 years, I commuted in, and we did programs and services for families in the inner city of Atlanta. Eventually, it became apparent that if we were going to really have maximum impact on families and communities, we need to be a part of that process. And so as a family, we relocated in a high-crime area in Atlanta where most of our families lived. And frankly, that changed everything in our way of doing charity. Much of our programming up to that time was handing out clothing, food, basic one-way services. When we moved into the community and became neighbors, we saw the destructive impacts of that, how it did not create a sense of community, but rather further alienated folks, the givers from the receivers, and produced some very unhealthy dependencies, which we decided we needed to get away from. And so living in the inner city, entering into relationships over time with struggling neighbors profoundly impacted the way we have gone about our charity.
Was there one episode or was it a compilation of episodes that led you to conclude that the way that we have been giving charitably is wrong?
I think the thing that most profoundly impacted me was the first year, the first Christmas we were in the city.
1981, just to set the scene.
That's correct. We, prior to that time, did an adopt-a-family program for Christmas where we gave the names of kids their ages to caring families in the suburbs who would buy gifts and on Christmas Eve deliver those gifts directly to the families. And it was it did produce a lot of excitement, a lot of joy. But when we moved into the community, and for the first time I was able to sit in the homes of some of those recipient families, that's when I saw something that I hadn't seen before. When the gift-bearing families arrived, it created a lot of excitement with the children. The moms were gracious, perhaps a little embarrassed. Mm. But if there was a father in the home, he just disappeared. He was out the back door. And I realized what was happening was that these parents were being exposed in front of their own children for their inability to provide. The moms would endure that indignity for the sake of the children. It was just more than the dads could handle, and their impotence was being exposed in front of their families, and it was very, very hurtful. So we said, we've got to find a different way of going about our charity. And so That was a catalyst to change our paradigm totally.
That one single episode pretty much convinced you.
It did it. It was the catalyst for our looking at all of the charity we were engaged in and looking behind the scenes to see how it really was impacting the recipients, how it eroded personal dignity, how it was kept them in a pitiable victim position as opposed to inviting them into the process of exchange within the community.
Darren Ash, you want to weigh in?
Yes, about 2 years ago, every year we try to do something new relating to empowerment, and 2 years ago we said, you know what, we do not want to adhere to the old, custom of letting our families be sponsored. So we partnered with a couple of faith organizations and created a Jubilee store where our families could buy holiday gifts for 30 cents on the dollar. And we did see a ton of dignity in that. And it was mainly because then Christmas became a transaction between that parent and the child, not a transaction between, you know, a middle-class volunteer and that child. But when we brought that Jubilee store out, we were not that popular because of the old sacred cow of sponsoring poor children.
Mm. Carol?
And I'll tell you, Bob and Darren, when you do things like that, you take away the good feeling that I get when I give that gift to a child, and the child hugs me. And so you take that away from me when you tell me that's not the right way to do it, right?
That was the gift that I ask sponsoring parents to give. I asked them, when we changed our paradigm, I said, would you give an extra gift this year? You know that good feeling that you experience when you see the kids receive those gifts. I want you to give that good feeling to the parents or to the dads. Let's call it dignity for dads. And that's an extra gift that we ask you for. And frankly, folks responded to that, especially when they realized that the proceeds from the sale of these toys went into employing unemployed parents in the community. And so that gift kept on giving all year long.
Right, and the proceeds from our Jubilee store are funneled back into our microloan fund. So it is kind of a pay-it-forward type scenario, and the parents know that by buying Christmas for their own kids, they are also funding potential loan for another participant.
So it's not so much the charitable contribution after all. It's how the charitable contribution
is being dispersed. That's exactly right. It's wise giving. It's giving that produces dignity rather than depletes dignity.
But to your point, Carol Hardison from Crisis Assistance Ministry, about you needing to feel good as the giver.
Yes.
Is there not an ego component involved for the caregiver as much as the person receiving the charity?
Well, okay, since we're using me in this model, I certainly don't want to say there's an ego component, but I will tell you, no matter what congregational pew I might sit in, the person in the pulpit says to me, go out and give, go out and feed. And so I would say to you, it's not my ego. It's what my pastor told me. It's what my rabbi told me to do.
It is you're merely following the instructions.
Aren't I?
Bob Blupton, should anybody be surprised, you are basing your logic on biblical principles. Should anyone be surprised?
Oh, you want to drag God into this discussion, do
Well,
you?
Only because Jesus had an awful lot to say about helping the poor.
He did indeed. He did indeed. And I think the question is, are we really helping? How are we helping? So if you look at Scripture, from the earliest days, gleaning was one of those scriptural mandates. In other words, those that didn't have land couldn't participate in the harvest. The command was to the farmers, don't reap to the competitive edges of your field. Allow grain to remain. Allow grapes to remain so that those that don't have land can participate in the harvest. The command could have been reap to the competitive edges and give some of that grain to the poor. The command was no, let the poor participate in the harvest. And so from the earliest days, participation in the process of meeting need was a solidly biblical concept. Of course, in the New Testament, scripture that most often is quoted is, "Inasmuch as you have done it unto the least of these, you have done it unto me," Christ said. Some translations say, "Inasmuch as you've done it unto these little brothers of mine." But there is an affection, there's an implied relationship between giver and recipient. That becomes very important to effective charity. And then, of course, the New Testament command about if a man won't work, we shouldn't feed him. So there's a very good biblical argument that can be made that charity is vital and important, but how we go about it is equally important.
The infirmed, however, that's not what you're talking about. The infirmed, the disabled, the challenged, either physically or mentally, those are not the people that you're saying we should be more discerning with our donations.
Yeah, they really are.
How so? Okay.
They really are. You in your opening comments said this time of year we are going to help those that can't help themselves. I want to challenge that. Almost everybody has some talent, some ability, some energy to contribute to the process. We say in our community, no one is so poor that they have nothing to bring to the exchange. Everyone has something to contribute. It becomes the responsibility of those of us with resources to find, develop those mediums of exchange so everybody can be a participant.
Okay, Darren Ash, you're on the spot here with this question. Do you see this as a delicate line to draw? Meaning, when do you know it's okay to empower someone and that they simply have to step away from assistance and manage more on their own? Or is your staff trained enough to know when that client is ready to step out on their own?
Absolutely. You know, we only hire clinically trained master's level social workers that basically help decide what, you know, they assess what that person is capable of doing. And it is a strengths-based type assessment. I think Bob's correct. Our program is trained to look at the strengths of the person and say, you know, do we believe that this person is capable of that, or are we going to focus on their weakness and say, oh, no, we need to take care of them? But it's not Darren Ash's assessment, because I am not a clinician, but we leave it to the pros to basically draw that baseline of where we think they should be able to perform. And then we kind of draw their family support plan from there.
Now, if you want to join our discussion today, by the way, our guests are Bob Lupton, author of the book Toxic Charity, How Churches and Charities Hurt Those They Help, and that is obviously the subject of our discussion today, joined also by Carol Hardison, Chief Executive Officer, Crisis Assistance Ministry, and that was Darren Ash, Executive Director of Charlotte Family Housing. Ivan on Facebook wrote, I suggest that listeners in society consider rethinking the constraints and expectations that we place on nonprofits. He raises the question about measuring the efficiency of the nonprofit. Fair question?
Efficiency is certainly one criteria. However, this is not a very efficient business. It's a painstaking business. It's a messy business. And it's two steps forward and three steps backward sometimes. So though efficiency is important, effectiveness it should be the criteria.
Yes, Carol. We could very efficiently do toxic charity all day. And so that's right. That's very key. It's the outcomes of your business that are important.
Let's then go to the phone lines here. Taylor in Charlotte is going to join us with a question. Taylor, thanks for calling in.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to ask about, I guess, this line that you're saying is kind of a tricky balance, because I get that there are these issues with dependency and the desire to empower someone to help solve their own problems with their strengths. But then there's also this, the counter side to this argument is that as a society, I feel like we tend to, I guess, blame the victim for being caught in these situations. And so I'm a little concerned about how some of this charitable giving is being talked about right now, because I know just from experience and as an academic perspective that people that become homeless often end up so as a result of contextual and situational factors. And so I wouldn't want the discussion to lead someone to think, well, I just shouldn't give to causes that support homelessness. I think that the distinction of effective programs makes a lot of sense, because, yes, we do need to make sure that we're treating it in a way that is ending the cyclical nature of homelessness, but talking about it in a way that, I guess, adds to this stereotype of homelessness being attributed to some sort of individual characteristic is really problematic for me.
Carol is chomping at the bit to answer your question, Taylor.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your question. What my message is blame the system. If I was hungry and I had children to feed, and there, you know, just the feeling of that, and I knew three places to go to immediately receive assistance, I would line up and I would go to all three. And so thank you for your question. It is a fine line of distinction here. And I'm saying the system, those of us who are leading and participating and doing the giving, are actually the ones that are the blame.
And do you worry, Bob Lupton, that what you're writing about here may discourage people from giving? They've been looking for an excuse all along.
Well, I'm not sure that they've been looking for an excuse.
Well, I'm being rather cynical. I understand.
But the spirit of compassion is alive and well in our country. And, 90% of our population is involved in one way or another in giving or charitable involvement. It's just a question of whether or not that giving is responsible, and we're measuring the right outcomes. If poverty is decreasing, if folks' independence is increasing, if self-sufficiency is increasing, we should feel very good. If the opposite is true, we need to start asking ourselves the hard questions.
Bob Lupton is author of the book Toxic Charities. Also with us, Carol Hardison, Executive Director, CEO of Crisis Assistance Ministry. Darren Ash is Director, Founder of Charlotte Family Housing. And our discussion about charitable giving and how to make it work better for all of us, the givers and the takers. We're back with more of Charlotte Talks right after this.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Garage Door Guru, providing local, comprehensive garage door service for over 12 years, including detailed repairs and door installations. Offering fine German-made garage doors, details, go garagedoorguru.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, U.S. Airlines and a shortage of pilots. U.S. Airlines could soon be facing the biggest shortage of pilots in decades. How the industry is coping with mandatory retirement and stricter rules on flight experience. That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon here on 90.7 WFAE.
If you'd like to join Charlotte Talks today, you can do so now. Call 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323 or 800-603-WFAE or reach us online at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
The car served me through college, grad school. It moved me from Minneapolis to Portland, Oregon, and then Portland, Oregon to Augusta, Georgia. And the Lumina is still giving by putting my favorite programs on the air. It feels awesome. My name is Bethany, and I donated my car to public radio.
Your unwanted vehicle can support your favorite WFAE shows with the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program. Get details at WFAE.org, and thanks.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Chris Clackham sitting in for Mike Collins. Let's continue our discussion about reasonable, good, charitable giving. You're not trying to discourage charitable giving, Bob Lupton. We're just trying to be good, better stewards with the money. Is that the message here?
It is the message. Some have said this question of charitable giving or looking negatively at it is going to discourage people. I would say that the opposite is true. When folks understand that their giving can actually empower those that it's intended to, that's a very motivating factor. And so where those that are looking for an excuse, perhaps they could find it in toxic charity. But I don't see that the case with most folk.
Darren Ash, you wanted to add something that Taylor was talking about in that we should not blame the victims.
Right. I think, you know, we are 100% saying the opposite, emphasizing the strengths of the clients that we're serving, that we are really compelled to build a strong foundation for our poor, to value the person that makes $8 an hour as much as our investment banker. And if you value those jobs the same, then you create a strong foundation for the poor, and you learn to stock the pond a little bit with below market transactions. Our poor are, you know, they are, you know, subject to predatory lending practices. They pay more for their food. Everything works against them. So we try to build a strong foundation, play to their strengths, believe in their strengths, stock the pond a little bit, but value personal accountability. That, I think that's the message.
If you want to join our discussion, our phone numbers are 704-926-9323 or 1-800-603-WFAE, 1-800-603-9323. You can get us online by going to WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. Karen in Charlotte emailed in this comment. It is going to introduce the political element into this discussion. She says, I've been torn about bringing this up. It's so obvious the system, Section 8 especially, is broken. But in discussing it, I certainly do not want to be lumped in with conservatives who would throw the needy to the wolves. How to give a hand up, which does often start with a hand out, without creating dependency, is her question. The answer isn't to abolish the handouts, in her opinion, leaving people hungry and homeless, but neither is the answer to continue the handouts indefinitely. She writes also, it's easy for those on the outside to complain about the poor and to decry any resources going to those who need help. It's refreshing to hear from folks on the front line that changes need to be made. You are trying to be more efficient. Carol Hardison.
Another fabulous question and comment. And you're exactly right. So the government, which really has most of the money in the system through everything from energy assistance to Medicaid, the government has strict rules that actually do make it very hard to live the philosophy that you're hearing today. So Charlotte, very uniquely, and we're known for it, creates public-private partnerships where we take what the government narrowly defines as our ability to do, let's say, Section 8 housing, and we blend with it models like Charlotte Family Housing, other models that you see at the Salvation Army and the Men's Shelter. where, and at crisis assistance, every day we blend the government restrictions, which are very toxic, with our private belief in counseling and empowering.
And Chris, you know, we partner with the Charlotte Housing Authority, and they provide us some short-term vouchers. But what we provide them is a lot of these supportive services with clinical social work, with microloans, with all sorts of things, so that families that are able can graduate earlier, and that way that frees up some of those other Section 8 vouchers for those that really do need longer-term assistance, like the elderly or the disabled.
Those of you in this work do have your critics, though, don't you, who doubt that you are doing all that you can do to ensure that the charitable donations are indeed going for their intended purposes?
Well, the news media seems to like a good story of controversy, and so we hear a good bit. And certainly there are organizations that do not perform well, but for the most part, I think the industry, or the compassion industry, is rightly motivated. But responsibly carrying out that charity is quite a challenge. Our caller mentioned Section 8 housing. In our inner city neighborhood in Atlanta, Section 8 housing is viewed as a very negative thing. That means a slumlord is renting a house at above market rates and is going to bring in troublesome families, and so there's neighborhood reaction against Section 8 just as a category. I say that Section 8 is an opportunity for men and women who are capable and who are into the property management business, into real estate, to do an excellent job of managing their housing. So it's an opportunity for those with marketplace skills and abilities to provide a very important service of affordable housing in a community, as opposed to letting that be the domain of slumlords.
Let's go back to the phone lines now. Jay in Charlotte. Jay, been holding for a while. Thanks so much.
Thank you. How are you guys doing this morning?
Fantastic.
Good. My question was, I myself had to go down to, I fell on hard times, me and my family, and I had to go down to crisis assistance. And I appreciate the help and the assistance that you guys do offer to us, or to people, period. I just didn't see, I always remember when I went there, the sign said, rent, utility, dignity. I think that's what it says. But as a man, it just didn't feel, it didn't give me that much dignity when I got there, and it was basically all women staff. I think it was one guy there that was that gave us that could give you help or assistance. But as from one man to and I'm not against women. I'm not that at all. It's just It didn't feel like any dignity in that when you're trying to communicate or trying to express what you need and the help you need, and it was just all women staff, and it didn't feel.
Jay, let me. I'm going to get Carol Hardison to address your gender issue there about the agency, but let me ask you, where are you now?
I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And where are you in your position in life? Are you still relying upon crisis assistance ministry?
Oh, no, I'm not. I went down for help. They couldn't help me because I wasn't, my power wasn't cut off at that moment. Or, it was about to be cut off.
I guess what I'm getting to is, where are you economically right now? Are you better off than when you went to crisis assistance ministry?
Honestly, no. I'm pretty much in the same boat because I couldn't receive any help at that time. So all I had to do was just try to do what I could do for myself and my family,
which you did.
Yes.
Okay, Carol Hardison.
Thank you so much for sharing. Dignity is on the wall that you saw. Preserving dignity is what is in our logo. And the fact is, this whole business strips dignity. And I appreciate you sharing that. I go back to what Bob shared a few minutes ago. You know, it should be, our dream is that you have a relationship with someone that understands the long-term financial challenges that you face. And then in talking with that person, they know you're going to need a little help with your electric bill. And so they contact Crisis Assistance Ministry and say, would you please make sure this family doesn't lose their electricity while we're working with them, and that you don't stand in a crowded standing room only lobby and feel that loss of dignity that you felt.
Jay, thanks so much for your phone call. Let's continue here. Corey in Charlotte is calling in as well. Corey, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks so much. This conversation is so appropriate. It was really helpful. I live in Charlotte. I'm headed to Columbia, South Carolina, where I attend school. I'm in a graduate program for social work. So this is like a divine moment for me. One of the things I wanted to mention is, as we talk about dealing with how support is giving, I think that the major issue is that we need to work in such a way to remove barriers for people. I think that the higher point and higher point of change is matters of social justice, so that we are not just people who give items or money or financial resources, but our nonprofit organizations are working in such a way to remove barriers. I think that the store that the gentleman mentioned, where people come in and get things 30 cents on the dollar, is a great idea, except the problem is that only happens at Thanksgiving and Christmas. So we must do something that throughout the rest of the year, families are able to access all kinds of things with those barriers removed. So I think that's the core underpinning of what even our social work founders were after. They weren't just about giving support, reducing it to just, and then we don't have to quibble about the question about making sure that somebody's dignity is maintained, because we're actually transforming systems.
Very good. Thanks for your call on that. Bob Lupton or Darren, you want to have something to say there?
Go ahead, Darren.
Yeah, real quick, again, the Christmas store thing was a really small example. You know, we really do try throughout the course of the year to create a ton of below market transactions. We have a car purchase plan where someone can buy a car 50% of wholesale value, interest-free for 2 years. We have a token economy system where you can earn, Walmart gift cards. We know that there are a lot of predatory lending practices toward the poor, and it costs the poor to be poor. And so we are constantly trying to fight that battle. The latest battle we're fighting are these for-profit colleges that just really take so much advantage of the poor for these classes and rack up debt that they can never get out from under. So trust me, this is very much on the forefront of our minds.
And I would say that the most dignifying way of dealing with our neighbors, lower-income neighbors, is to find ways of legitimate exchange in every aspect of life. Toys at Christmas time is just a good example, but that's one section of a little store that used to be a clothes closet, is now a thrift store where folks can come in and buy quality clothes at a bargain price all year long, and the proceeds go to create jobs and job training. So inviting, setting up systems that enable our lower-income neighbors to engage in exchange is a very dignifying process. It counteracts the giveaway, dignity-depleting charitable process.
They have skin in the game. The recipients, the clients.
Everybody universally loves to find a bargain.
Yeah.
In any culture, any class. And so to create opportunities for the poor to discover bargains is a very positive thing. And no loss of pride there. Everybody gets
excited. Very quickly, Bob, if you could, you write in the book an awful lot about food pantries. church-run food pantries.
Yeah.
But your idea about how to do that in a more reasonable, business-like way is what?
We did start out with a food pantry and converted that eventually into a food co-op, where recipients become members of the co-op. They put in $3 a week. We combine that with former food pantry dollars and go to the food bank and purchase somewhere between $50 and $80 worth of food for that $3. And that expands their food buying power dramatically. And the members of the co-op have skin in the game. Therefore, they're owners of the co-op. And it's their dollars that produce food for them. And so it's a way of, again, building community among folks who otherwise have to stand in a food line.
I've just time for two more questions. Let me ask this real quick. And, Carol, I want to start with you. Do you think others who are in the business of distributing charity, running charities, feel the same way as you, that the system – there's lots of room for improvement in what happens with our charitable donations?
This is not talked about much, no. Until we really began talking about Bob's book a lot in this community, this is not what we talk about at executive director meetings, I can tell you.
So there is room for improvement?
Yes.
Okay, Darren Ash, your thought on that?
Oh, absolutely. I think that... you know, whether it's the faith community being an institution that, you know, has customers they need to serve, or the nonprofits, there's a lot of sacred cows out there, and the old saying, they make good hamburgers.
And the answer, is predictable from you, Bob Lupton?
Predictable, and that's why we need this discussion.
Author of the book, Toxic Charity, Bob Lupton, good luck to you. Carol Hardison from Crisis Assistance Ministry, keep up the good work. Darren Ash, do the same over at Charlotte Family Housing. I'm Chris Clackham for Mike Collins. You've been listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.